Welcome to the Larry Kreider's Leadership Podcast. Larry is the author of over 40 books, the founder of Dove International, a worldwide family of churches and ministries in six continents, and has over 50 years of leadership experience. He and his guests will share inspirational leadership insights from their journey with God. These insights, gleaned from serving leaders in many nations, will transform your life and leadership. For more information on Larry's books and resources, visit LarryKreider.com.
Welcome to the Larry Kreider Leadership Podcast. Larry Kreider here. With me in the studio today is my longtime friend and colleague, Peter Bunton. Welcome, Peter.
Thank you, Larry. Great to be here.
Well, I'm excited about talking to you today. Of course, we've been friends for many years. We worked together throughout the world in leadership training in the nations for many years. But you have given a lot of time to bring a lot of us an understanding of how to see a succession handled in a way where we can say it's success. And your new book, Succeeding at Succession, tells it all. So why did you write this book, Peter?
I wrote the book because I was coming across a lot of material that talked about founders and starting Christian movements and churches. And most of them talked about the founder and then stopped. Oh. And I began to think, well, what happens next? You know, what happens after the founder? Why aren't we looking at those issues when it comes to the second generation and so on? So I started off a search, really, which led to my doing a PhD, doing doctoral research, looking at leadership theology, leadership theory, and how that affects succession within Christian movements.
Well, this, of course, is very, very, very important to me. Because, I mean, you've worked behind the scenes very hard and part of a team that's helped me with my succession process. And I will be turning leadership of the Dove International Global Movement of Churches over to a younger leader. Been in this for about 7 years, and you've been a real key in the whole process. So grateful for you. So in your book, you write about leadership succession and at times specifically talk about founder succession. Is founder succession different from all other successions? And if so, in what ways is it different?
Well, great. Thank you. That's a really great question. And I know I'm sitting opposite a founder. And so you've been a great example. But there are issues. And I think the literature and the research shows that. For example, there are often characteristics that founders have that perhaps certain other leaders do not have. And that, of course, makes sense. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're entrepreneurial. Maybe they're visionary. They see big picture ideas and they want to kind of do something in practice about it. So often you get a certain type of person who's led to found organizations. Perhaps in the Christian world, we would say they have an apostolic gift. And that's great and wonderful, but people like that always have a vision. They always see possibility. They're always trying to do something fresh and new. And sometimes, as you know, it's time to let go.
It's
time to pass on to someone else. So founder succession can be a little bit more complicated. The organization or the network of churches doesn't have any history of doing this. There's no kind of nothing in the family genes, as it were, in the DNA. So you have to figure it out for the first time. And founders obviously have so much invested in they're founding. It's often years of, you know, blood, sweat, toil, tears, prayers.
You're speaking to the choir right now. You know that.
You know, there's a lot of commitment, a lot of energy goes in and over the years. And to see that handed over to someone else's care and leadership can be difficult. Even if the founder knows it's right, it's time. Of course, we're humans. We have emotional attachments and so on.
Right.
So I think one of the things that's different is this really relies on the characteristics of being a founder. And a lot of literature has come up with the term founder syndrome.
What is founder syndrome?
And so founder syndrome is the founder so vested in what they founded that they can't let go, or they find it so hard to let go.
Interesting.
So sometimes founder succession can be a bit more difficult than other kinds of succession. Okay, it's that having to let go. And of course, the organization that's founded, is also vested in this. Do they want to let the founder go?
Right.
Can they envisage a future where someone else is calling the shots or providing leadership? And then research shows that even in bureaucratic things, founders tend to have a lot more power. Mm. You know, there was research in organizations and nonprofits, and founders often sign off on everything. They want to review the minutes before they go out. They're like involved in lots of detail.
Yeah.
And non-founder leaders often are just happy to delegate those things to other people and are not so involved. So there's a whole kind of dynamic going on with the people in the organization and the founder that can make it a little bit more complicated.
It makes sense. I was in an airport in Nairobi, Kenya, and I sat with a man who's involved in their judicial system, and he's a Christian. And he asked what I'm doing, and I said I'm in the midst of, you know, a succession, and he asked me how that works. And then he said, well, I'll tell you about what's happened around us. He said many, many founders die in that position, and they never really give it up. And I said, well, by the grace of God, we're trying to find a way not to do that, way we can do it in a healthy way.
Yes.
And I appreciate your book and all that you've learned. Yeah. You've helped us so much to help us with that. So what are some of the typical concerns a ministry might have when considering succession?
Sure. I would say there are three broad themes that come out a lot as we study different organizations and churches. Mm-hmm. I've interviewed people. There is research literature. I think one is something called mission drift. Mm-hmm. A lot of organizations of founders are concerned that maybe the nature of the ministry or the church or the nonprofit will change over time. It will drift away from the real founding mm-hmm. purpose. Mm-hmm. So that's an issue that concerns people.
Yeah, I understand that.
And rightly so. We see many organizations now, you know, 50 years later, 100 years later, that are really not like they were when they
started.
Very
different.
Very different in terms of their ethos, their values, mm-hmm. even their theology and their beliefs. So I think that's one area that concerns people. A second one, I would say, is a word that's used is routinization. Okay, routinization, which sounds very complicated, but what it tends to be is in the second generation, we put into place more laws or policies or rules, and we have handbooks and so on, which can be a good thing.
Probably needed.
And sometimes it's needed, mm-hmm. especially if the founder is so big picture, they've not given attention to policies and procedures, which have to happen in any organization or church or ministry. But I think there's a concern that this routinization becomes something bigger than it should be. Mm-hmm. And so we move from let's hear God together, let's pray together, to what does policy 2A point B say about this?
Right.
And it can become rule-based, can become more bureaucratic, basically. And I think that's a concern within many organizations, particularly Christian organizations, mm-hmm. that drift into policies and procedures rather than vision.
Don't you often see that in many different denominations? They start out as a movement and then eventually get into routinization.
Yes. Yeah. And it can be gradual. And mm-hmm. as I say, we often need some systems and policies and procedures. They're not all bad. But those things tend to come to the fore, and there's a greater emphasis on those rather than can we do something fresh? What is God saying to us today?
Right.
So that's one issue. And then I think a third concern within organizations is whether the founder's just going to stay around too long.
Yeah.
And there actually are real-life examples. Back about 30 years ago, there was a huge megachurch in the USA where he wasn't the founder, but he'd been around, I think, for about 45 years. I can't remember the exact number. And he announced he was standing down. You know, they even announced who the successor was going to be in 2 years' time. And then 2 years became 3 years. And you know, it just went on and on. And in the end, the person who'd been publicly acknowledged just left and said, this person's never going to give up, you know, the leadership here. And I think that leader stayed on another like 7 or 8 years, having announced that he was going. And so it ties into founder syndrome. It ties into some of the things we've already mentioned. Mm-hmm. So I would say three of the biggest concerns I found were this concern of, are we going to drift as an organization away from our founding values and vision? is there going to be too much of an emphasis on policy and procedure? Mm-hmm. And then is the founder actually going to let go and let right. others take the reins?
I'm clearly planning to let go. I want you to know, Peter.
Okay, that's good.
That's good to know. And by the way, everyone listening today, you know, Peter's written this amazing book, Succeeding at Succession, and he's going to different parts of the world, interviewed leaders, founders of various ministries, and the subtitle is Founder and Leadership Succession in Christian Organizations and Movements, and a great book. I've recommended this to so many people. So check out the show notes if you're interested. You can get the information on that, and you can get that through Amazon or wherever you buy books, Succeeding at Succession. Another question for you, Peter. Should a Christian organization or ministry appoint from within or outside the ministry?
Yeah, that's
a big one.
That's a big question. Let me say a little bit from the kind of business organizational okay. world okay. first. It seems fairly clear that appointing within is a good idea in most cases. There's a book here, Built to Last, mm-hmm. by Collins and Porras. And they looked at really exceptional businesses and companies in different sectors of society. And they compared them to another business in that sector who maybe they were still carrying on, but they weren't as noteworthy. They were not as successful. And they found that the successful companies appointed leaders from within the company on average 6 times more than the less successful companies. So one of the things that comes out from the business world is having leadership development programs, appointing within actually can really help success.
I believe that.
And I think it's the same in Christian ministries too. If someone's kind of grown up within the church or the movement, they probably understand the vision. Their values are probably in their heart already. They don't have to be taught as much. Often people might trust them more. People may know them and trust them because of relationships. And also in a Christian movement or a church network, it's not a business. We build with relationships.
That's right.
It's not a bureaucratic
Correct.
Function. Mm-hmm. So both within Christian organizations and non-Christian organizations, appointing within seems to be the preferred option, and there's a lot of research that supports that's a good idea. However, I do want to say there is some research that also says if the organization or the movement really is in crisis or difficulty,
right.
then sometimes it needs such radically new thought
I agree.
That maybe someone not mm-hmm. from within the system mm-hmm. can bring that because the people within the system are not seeing it.
Correct.
So there is literature that shows that in certain circumstances, organizations perhaps look yeah. outside, and that can be a beneficial thing.
Mm-hmm.
But most churches and networks want to appoint within, and that seems to be right. a good approach.
So, Peter, does the Bible provide us examples of succession that we should follow?
I'm going to say yes and no.
Oh, that's confusing.
Well, I think yes, obviously, we seek to learn from the scriptures.
Right.
Jesus Christ himself trained leaders to follow
true,
him.
True.
So he taught them. He showed them how to do things. He evaluated and gave them feedback. And then he left the scene, and
right.
the Father sent the Spirit to be with them and advise them. So, of course, there are principles
sure.
of leadership succession. We see Elijah training Elisha
true.
In the Old Testament and taking Elisha with him and showing him how he
right.
you know, prophesied and preached and so on. So there are certainly good principles, but I think some people have just assumed, well, the Bible gives you these steps to follow and
right.
you follow it. And there's even some literature that says that. But a number of people who've been interviewed really didn't agree with that approach. They seem to take the line, God will show us what to do for our unique
mm-hmm.
situation.
Mm-hmm.
Each organization is different. Each network of church
right,
is different.
Right.
And so there is freedom to mm-hmm. come up with different models. So I've seen people kind of approach it the both ways. And the Bible has some good principles, but it's different.
Mm-hmm.
Elijah and Elisha, for example, we don't usually have chariots of fire appearing in our board
usually
meetings.
The first leader doesn't just disappear.
Yes.
Right.
So I think we have to be cautious. There seems to be a lot of freedom, but also it raises some other interesting issues. One is the subject of leadership theory and contingency theory.
Talk about that.
And contingency theory really sees leadership as you have to find the right person to match the right situation. So this idea that some Christians have, well, we find someone just like the outgoing pastor or the founder of our group of churches. Yes, we're always looking for the right heart and godliness right. and values and so on. But contingency approaches to leadership says, well, maybe it's a different day today, mm-hmm. and the kinds of issues that leader may have to deal with and face could be very different to when we started out 30 years ago. So I interviewed one international mission agency, philanthropic agency, and they were very clear as we move on from the founder, and I think the organization was about 25 years old, what we need from a leader right now is to deal with certain issues that are very clear, and it needs a different kind of person, a different skill set for that. So there are some interesting issues to think through that God can guide us and will. There are biblical examples, but we need to apply them. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a question of just following four straight steps.
I think from a personal perspective, Peter, you've heard me say this publicly, I have felt like my successor really needs some different kinds of gifts than I've had. And because of a different generation, we're 44 years old as a movement, and you're growing from one church to over 1,100 churches in 26 nations. But now it's really, we use the term chapters often. You know, chapter one was I was a pastor, one church, planted a few churches. Chapter two became a movement. Now chapter three, well, with my successor, Merle Shank, he will lead differently and needs to. I keep telling him, we don't need another Larry Crowder. We need a Merle Shank. So I would lean toward that, even though I understand both sides of that coin. Good. I think as far as scriptural examples for me, the one I've liked the most, has helped me the most, is Moses and Joshua, I think.
Okay.
Because for 40 years, he really trained Joshua. Yeah. And Joshua was a different kind of leader than Moses was. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's just me personally.
Yeah.
Another question for you. Are there or can there be differences in navigating succession according to different cultures?
Yes, that's a great question. And I think the answer is yes, again. If we're saying there are truths and principles in Scripture that we want to follow, that's great. But we know in any work we do for God, we have to contextualize it. What works for this group of people, this situation, this city, this nation, this culture? And so leadership succession can be a bit like that as well. Some cultures really put a great emphasis on honoring and esteeming older people. They have councils of elders and so on. So the way succession has to be handled there is perhaps a little bit different. Even in any context, we want to honor those who've gone before
us.
But some cultures will really stress that. So there may be some kind of council of elders that you still want, and the new leader goes to get input from them, and that would be a way of be seen as a way of honoring tradition and history. So it can play out a little bit differently. And then also, certainly when it comes to perhaps having some kind of ceremony, which is important.
Yes, it is.
You know, installation.
Right.
How do we install the leader? In certain cultures, there are things within the culture that you'd be expected to do, certain festivities, certain events and speech giving and so on. So it can play out differently. There are truths, there are principles, but we must honor the culture and how things are done there as much as possible.
So when you get down to it, you have to really understand who's making the decisions here with this. So talk to us about that. Who does make the decisions?
Sure. That's, of course, a wonderful question. Yeah, who makes the decisions? I think what we recommend is it's a number of people. Mm-hmm. The outgoing leader should be involved if at all possible,
right.
Especially in a founder situation. Who do you feel is going to follow after you as a founder and have those kinds of values and so on? So that's important. And then any kind of leadership team or council, however, you know, your church or organization is governed. It's not just a decision for one people, one person, not just one person. So we want the whole leadership to be supportive of the decisions that are being made. But of course, it's always good to have someone outside. In our movement of churches, we have an International Apostolic Council, but then we have apostolic oversight, someone who's not on the leadership team, who's providing input and guidance. So having that oversight from an apostolic figure or outside advisors can be very helpful during this process. It's often good to consult widely, but of course there's a difference between consultation and actual decision-making.
True.
So you can't usually get hundreds of people involved with voting or something like that. But you want to consult. If it's an international organization, how do our African friends, our Asian friends, our South American friends feel about this? How do they see it?
Yeah.
Because although leaders lead and must be appointed, you don't lead if no one's going to follow
you.
And so it's good to know, is there a general sense of affirmation and consent? So there's different ways to handle it. And of course, it's possible to establish some kind of advisory team in this process too.
Yeah. And we've done that. You've been on that team. Yes. It's made all the difference, Peter, all the difference.
And again, advisory team is not making decisions.
Right.
Perhaps they're drilling down on details. Mm-hmm. They're saying, have you thought about this? Mm-hmm. They're bringing in some expertise or knowledge. So there are different people who can be involved, and I think it's good for them to be involved for it to be healthy.
Right. Well, what I appreciate so much about you in this book is, you know, you've written this book and you've done all the research and traveled throughout the world, et cetera, and it's been fantastic. But you've helped us live this, and I appreciate that so much, because this is, you know, coming from your life also. You've been an amazing advisor for us. And I asked you this on another podcast maybe a year ago, I remember. But to me, it's so important, and you've helped me with this. You helped me understand tacit knowledge. I didn't know what that was. And you took days, interviewed my wife, Laverne, myself, and talked to us about tacit knowledge and the importance of that for succession.
Okay. Sure. Well, tacit means silent or unspoken. So tacit knowledge really refers to what does the leader or the founder know and how do they behave? That's just natural to them. It's instinctual. They've done it for so long. And usually a founder will know all kinds of things, will know how to do all kinds of things, will know who to go to in certain situations, will know how to handle this issue, this problem. And you don't want all that knowledge and experience to walk out the door.
Right.
And so what you can do, and we've tried to do, is try and make that tacit knowledge spoken.
Right.
So you're correct. What we did in our situation, I interviewed you and your wife, and we asked all kinds of questions.
Right.
How do you handle this? How would you deal with this situation? Who do you go to for this? Who do you go to when things need to pray for? Who do you go to when there needs to be financial advice? How would you deal with this particular issue in the movement of churches?
Yeah.
And we spent, as you say, some hours.
Oh, yeah, a few days, I remember.
And there was all this stuff in you and your wife, Laverne, that had probably not been written down, not been recorded. And we wanted to have a record of that.
Right.
We were making the tacit or the unspoken spoken.
Right.
And that seems to be an important thing. There's research, again, where organizations have done this, and they have saved themselves so many problems because the person in leadership just knows so much, but they don't know how much they know.
Right. Well, what I found intriguing was when you asked us all these questions, many of the questions I felt like, well, I think everybody knows that. You know, they all know that, but they really didn't.
Yeah.
We make those assumptions because of being in leadership for so long and working with people in certain ways and just knowing how the systems work.
Yeah.
It's really important for the next generation to at least understand why we do what we do. Correct. They can change it, but at least why we do what we do.
So just to follow up on that, so we have written those things down after the interview. So we have a document with as much as the knowledge in Larry and Laverne as we can find, and it's there for people to refer to in the future.
That's great, Peter. Great job. Peter, anything else that you want to say about your new book, Succeeding at Succession? Again, check out the show notes. More from Peter Bunn. He's been a writer for many years and a great blessing to us personally. I remember way back in the day when you were leading YWAM in part of England, and you know, and we've had so many years in different realms of leadership together, and appreciate you so much. Anything else that you want to share? Any last minute thoughts you have about succession or about this whole subject or about this book?
Succession is inevitable. We're all going to be involved. We're all going to face it, whichever side of the table we're on, whatever organization, business, church, movement. So we have to embrace it. It might seem difficult at times, but God's with us. And I think I wrote that book to try and give just some advice and some details to people. We can see how others have done it. Maybe our church, our organization is different, but we can still learn from the decisions that others have made. So that's recorded in that book. So I hope it just helps guide people who are facing this.
I'm sure it will. Again, Succeeding at Succession, Peter Bunton, founder and leadership of Succession in Christian Organizations and Movements. Check out the show notes. There'll be a link there. You can purchase that book. You can also go on Amazon or wherever you buy books. That is available really throughout the world. And Peter, thank you so much for being on the podcast today. And thank you for your life and the way you work with us for so many years, helping us with this exact thing. Mm-hmm. So this is not just a book you've written, but it's a life you've lived. And we're so grateful.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here.
Thank you. God bless you, everybody. So glad to have you today on the Larry Crowder Leadership Podcast. We learn these small things, changes we can make will make a major difference in our lives if we apply them as God leads us, and then not only be a blessing to us, but to those that we serve as we're in leadership. So God bless you. Have a great week and look forward to seeing you next week.
Thank you for listening to Larry Crider's Leadership Podcast. If you want more information about any of Larry's books, daily devotionals, small group resources, or any other teachings, go to LarryCrider.com.